Digital musicologists use computers to analyze music in ways that humans cannot. They turn melodies into ones and zeros to provide insight into how music works, why we like it, and what the most popular music reveals about culture. Leon Nafok is a staff writer for the Ideas section of the Boston Globe, where he asked the question, when computers listen to music, what do they hear? Leon, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
What is computational musicology, and how does that differ from the traditional, or I guess, analog musicology?
So the way you think about the difference is, traditional musicologists, they will listen to a song or a symphony or a sonata, and they will try to hear things in it themselves, and they'll spend a lot of time with it. They'll analyze it, and they'll sort of try to figure out what is it that makes it special and unique. With computational musicology, the premise is that you can take, you know, a lot of songs, a lot of symphonies, put them in a, you know, blender, essentially, and find patterns in what makes them similar, you can figure out sort of what patterns there are according to, what kind of patterns are in a particular era or a particular genre or a particular composer's body of work.
Mm-hmm. So this is part of a bigger movement we've heard about, you know, using algorithms and quantitative methods to better understand qualitative mediums. So what is it that the researchers here are trying to understand of digital or computational musicology?
Well, there are a bunch of different applications to this. I mean, like I said, that you could learn things about a particular composer's body of work. Like, did he invent a particular technique early in his career that he developed over the course of his life. You could learn, you know, how did one genre give way to another genre? You could figure out how did certain rhythmic innovations come about and how did they become popularized? How did certain styles travel geographically from one place to another?
Well, of course, melodies stick in our heads, but we repeat lyrics. So lyrically speaking, what does this study of digital musicology reveal about our culture right now?
Well, there have been a couple of lovely studies on lyrics that sort of essentially crunch, you know, gazillions of words and figure out what kind of tendencies they exhibit. So there's been, you know, there's one that looked at Billboard hits from 1955 to 2003, and they looked at what were the people talking about and how long were the sentences they were using, and they found that, you know, during tough economic times, who knows why, musicians tended to use longer sentences in their songs and often referred much more to the future than at other times, in better times. There's been other ones where they figured out that from 1980 to 2007, there's been a huge increase in the use of the pronoun I and a decrease in the use of we, which the researchers interpreted as a sort of increase in self-focus and narcissism.
You know, we actually talked with some researchers about that, the increased narcissism of pop music.
Uh-huh.
But that's so interesting, the longer sentences. Maybe, I don't know, that's the one thing they can spend more on or something. Well, let's hear an example of something that digital musicologists at MIT analyze. Beatles songs. Here's a bit from the song I Me Mine off the album Let It Be. Any specific takeaways from the Beatles study?
So the researcher I spoke to about the Beatles is a guy named Douglas Mason at Harvard, and he basically used this piece of software called Music 21, which was developed by an MIT professor, to analyze basically things like melody, you know, time signatures, chord changes in Beatles songs. And what he found was in pretty much every Beatles song, or majority of them, there's one chord that's just sort of not supposed to be there. Based on like the traditional rules of music theory, there's always one unexpected chord that kind of throws things off balance, and that sort of becomes, as he put it, the signature chord of the song, and it kind of became like the fingerprint of the song.
That's so interesting. I wonder, I mean, is there any indication of that leading to their popularity, or has any study been done on that?
It could be what accounts for why those songs are so much more, long-lasting, why we still like them, why we still find them exciting.
We're talking about how computers have changed the way that we analyze music with Leon Nafok, who writes for the Boston Globe. Well, you mentioned that these are tens of thousands of songs done over time. Is there anything to reflect, I don't know, changes beyond the lyrics from the days of the Beatles, for example?
In terms of sort of how music
sounds? Yeah, how music has changed.
Well, one comparison I looked at was concerned with loudness,
mm-hmm.
And how music is recorded. It used to be that pop songs were much more dynamic in terms of the decibel range that they covered. A song like "Stairway to Heaven" is incredibly dynamic, and it sort of builds gradually. It starts quiet, it gets loud, it gets quiet again. Due to various sort of pressures, apparently on producers, to really just make every song really, really loud, there's very little dynamism in sort of how pop music is recorded. So louds are loud, softs are loud too, and when you look at the graph, you just see a straight line over the top, whereas older songs kind of go up and down in a more dynamic way.
Well, we were so struck by that example that you gave in your article about Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven that we decided we'd try and illustrate it by fusing it with this is Katy Perry's California Girls first, then Stairway to Heaven. I'm just back at prom. But that is so interesting, starting loud, staying loud, and the dynamism. I'm wondering, listening to this, Leon, has changed the way that you view your own music listening or what you're hearing?
Yeah, well, so one thing I like about it is that it sort of offers the possibility that there's reasons why you like the things you like that you aren't actually aware of. I have my 15 favorite songs or something. I'm not totally sure what they have in common. It's possible that a piece of analytical software could figure out what they have in common, whether the melodies are, follow a certain pattern, or whether chord changes are, do a particular thing in all the songs that I like. And if that's possible to figure out, then it'd be possible to find a lot of songs that I've never heard that I would like. And I think that's a lot of what the applications of this stuff are.
And then we'll know a lot more about Leon Nafok. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Leon writes for the Ideas section of the Boston Globe, and you can find a link to his article, When Computers Listen to Music, What Do They Hear? That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Let us know what you think. You don't need a computer to tell us your music changes with the people who listen to it. So leave us your thoughts. Post a comment on our Facebook page or send us a tweet. Now coming up, the police and feds take down of a 1960s extortion ring that may have been one of the first steps for the gay rights movement. It's a story when word of mouth continues.
I read the news today, oh boy.